Welcome to Brad Kyle's Brad's Motorworks podcast. We'll be talking about some things about BMW, some things of cars in general, and some things about car repair. I hope you find it educational, enlightening, and I hope it increases your understanding of your car. And maybe along the way we'll have some fun too. Thank you for listening, and here we go. Episode number 73, Buying and Restoring Older BMWs. 1980s through the 2000 model years. I'm kind of going to concentrate on those kind of spread of model years because, frankly, prior to that, it becomes more of a kind of a specialty market. Certainly if you're buying a 60s or 70s BMW in particular, they're not going to be easy to find, and they potentially can require quite a bit of work. Okay. So that's really kind of a whole separate little bit of a podcast, really, or a subject matter as far as that much of older cars. Okay. I just decided on this one to kind of, just concentrate on the 80s through the 2000s because the cars are much more available. They're probably, for someone who's maybe looking for a second or a third car or a kind of a project car, it's typically, because it's not as old, they're hopefully going to be in reasonably good shape. And so, it's something if you want to do as a project yourself or maybe work with a shop or something. There's certainly ones out there that are worthwhile to restore completely, whether it be professionally or otherwise. So I just thought it'd be a good idea to kind of concentrate on those model years. So what I'm going to do first is to go through the different series that were available from the 1980s through the 2000s, in case you're not aware of it, and give you kind of a breakdown on that. And then I'm just going to talk about things to look for, different things, advantages, disadvantages, so on and so forth. So here we go. Okay, the 1980 models that were available. You had the 3 Series, which was what was called the E21 chassis, or the 320i. That was available really from, it was actually available from 1977, but again, I'm talking about the 80s. But essentially, that the 320i was available from 80 to 81. You had the E30 body, okay, which was the 318i or the 325. That was available from 81 to 94. The E36 3 Series, which was the 325, 328, and M3, those were available from 89 to 96. Then you had the E46, which was the 323, 325, 328, and 330, and also the M3, and those were available 97 to 05. Then in the 5 Series, you had the E28, which would be 528E, 533i, and 535i. Those were available 82 to 87. You had what was called the E34 chassis, which was the 525i, 530i, 535i, 540i, and those were available 88 to 94. And you had the E39, which was, 5 Series, and that was the 525i, 528i, 530i, 540i, and M5. Those were available 97 to 03. Personally, as far as 5 Series, my favorite one and the one that I own would be an E39 body or chassis. But just whatever, just throw that in there. 6 Series E24 chassis available as a 633 CSI. Those were available from 80 to 84. There was also from 84 to 89 was the 635 CSI. And from 86 to 88 was the M6 motorsport car. Okay. Then lastly, 7 Series, you had what was called the E23 chassis, which was the 733i, and that was available from 1977 to 84. You had the E32, which was the 735i, which was available from 86 to 92, and the 740i, which was available from 92 to 94. And you also had the 750iL, which the L means basically lengthened. It was a longer body. It's kind of like a chauffeur type car, whatever. And it was a 4.5-inch longer body, and it was all in the rear leg room. Okay. So the front doors and everything were all the same, but the rear doors were 4.5 inches longer, so to speak. So it was all rear leg room. and that would be the E. Well, then we had the E38, which was available as a 740i and 750iL, 1994 to early 01. 8 Series, which was what was called an E31, was available as an 840i from 93 to 95, an 850ci from 90 to 97, and an 850CSI, which that was a pretty rare car. And that was available from 95 to 97. Then we had the Z3 E36. That was available as a coupe or a roadster. The coupe was kind of, when that one first came out, everybody thought, God, that's kind of an ugly car. It had really weird lines on it. It eventually got be called what was called the clown's foot or the dork, okay? The people that have them love them. They actually have meetings that happen certainly at the national headquarters South Carolina, where they call it the Dork Fest. So the Z3 Coupe is a very interesting car. They also made it available as an M car, which those are very rare. And again, the people that like that kind of funky look of a car and the lines of it, that is a very highly sought after car, okay? But you got to kind of really buy into that dork sort of clown's foot look, okay? And then, of course, it was also available as a roadster. The roadster was available from 98 to 02, and the coupe, or the dork, was available from 98 to early 02, okay? As far as, you know, going out and buying a car when they're older like this, there's two episodes I'd recommend that you listen to as far as podcasts. One is episode number 10, which is called Pre-Purchase Inspection, Do I Need One? Okay. And the other one is episode 70, which is which older BMWs are most reliable? Okay. I would definitely check out, you know, if you're in the market or you're thinking about getting something, I would definitely listen to those two podcasts first. You want to arm yourself with, you know, obviously as much information as you can, especially, again, if you are going out looking for the possibility of buying maybe a second or third car. Maybe it's going to be your project car that you want to tinker on, whatever the case may be. Things to look for before you purchase. In my mind, you want to know what's been the origin of the car. In other words, where has it been in its life? And you can get that information, you should be able to, hopefully, off of Carfax. What you're looking for, in my mind, and maybe this is me, you know, born and raised in Southern California, personally, I would, unless I was looking for a really rare car that I just couldn't find anywhere else, I would not purchase a car that's been back east. Okay? That's my own personal opinion. And if you live back east, I think you know probably why I'm stating that, really. Because of, you know, ice and snow and road salts and all that stuff they use on the roads back there, it just wreaks havoc with the undercarriage of the car, okay? So it's just tough on the cars, that and the cold and the dampness and all the rest of it. If I was looking for a car that I wanted to have, you know, for restoration purposes or that I wanted to be able to keep for a long time, personally, I would not buy a car that's come from the back east. So, you know, again, that's just my personal feelings and experience. I have certainly seen some back east cars that were just rusted to death. You know, it's tough on them. So, helpful to know that it's an origin. Okay. You know, is there any rust damage for that matter? What about the service records? Are they available? Okay. That always means something regardless of how many owners have owned the car, if they can hand you a service record file with the car, that means quite a bit, especially if it's very complete, okay? That might be hard to find, but it's certainly a plus, okay? So look for that. How many owners have had the car, okay? Again, that's something you should be able to find off of Carfax, hopefully, okay? The fewer owners, in my mind, the fewer owners that have owned the car, the better. Okay, it's easier to be able to kind of track things. It means that they've probably there's been more of a pride of ownership because each person, if there's more than one, have kept the car longer than what the average person keeps the car. Okay, and just to let you know, and I've mentioned this on other podcasts, but in today's world, the time of this podcast production, which is 2020, the average age of a car in the United States is 11 years old. Okay, we are slowly, progressively keeping cars longer than what we used to. Whether that's in my mind, that's a good thing. It used to be the average age of a car was about 5 to 7 years old, and that has been slowly creeping up. Okay, so it means that whoever's keeping the car, they're keeping them longer. Okay, so they're still on the road. If the plan in whatever it is you're buying is to restore the car, you want to start out with the best, cleanest car with the lowest mileage possible. Okay. A person could say, well, that'd be true of any car purchase, Brad. Well, yeah, sure. But if you are buying an older car, you obviously want a car that's got the lowest mileage you can possibly find. Okay. And again, keeping in mind what I mentioned as far as national average in regards to miles per year. So if you can find a, let's say a 20 a 20-year-old car, okay? If it's national miles per year, that car should have 300,000 miles on it. At that point, I would be wondering, well, has it had an engine replacement? Has it had a transmission replacement? Because you're getting up towards the latter part of the life of those, in particular, those two particular items, okay? I'm not saying that the engine's completely worn out, but it also goes back to, well, if it is the original engine, what's been the oil change history as a for instance? So this is where the service records come into play. Okay. If someone can show, hey, look, I bought this car used, but it only had, 50 or 60,000 miles on it when I bought it. A 20-year-old car at this point would be a 2000 model year car. As far as BMW, 1999 and later is when they went to the prepaid maintenance agreement, which means that if a person followed what BMW said to do, that engine only got an oil change every 15,000 miles. Well, one would hope, for your sake, if you're buying the car, that at some point, hopefully earlier on in the life of the car, maybe from 50 or 60,000 miles on up, after the prepaid maintenance agreement had expired, that whoever owned the car at that point had the oil change more often. Okay. And frankly, that's if they have, that's the reason why the car's got 300,000 miles on it, and maybe it is the original engine. Okay. But still, take that into consideration. Okay. So you want to thoroughly road test the car. Okay. When I say that, I mean a 5-minute jaunt around the parking lot or around the neighborhood, in my mind, is not going to cut it. Okay, I personally would want to know. I'd want to get more of a feel of what that car is doing or not doing. And during this road test, you want to make note of any noises, smells, vibrations. How does the car feel? Okay, it certainly helps you if you've had previous experience with driving that particular model of car or something like it, okay? If you maybe you owned one for 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years and you haven't had one for 20 or 30 years, and now you're kind of like, hey, you're at a point in your life where you can afford to go out and buy a used car and kind of bring that love back into your life, so to speak, okay? Hopefully you kind of remember how they used to feel. And so, again, the road test, if it was me, I'd spend 20 minutes, a half an hour, maybe even more, okay, depending upon the circumstances. I would spend as much time as you possibly can road testing that car and take it through, stop and go and city and get out on the freeway and hopefully you're not in, crazy LA type traffic where, it's beep beep and you can't really pay attention to what the car is doing. Hopefully it's a little bit more relaxed than that, and you go from there with it. If you can, I would highly recommend again having a pre-purchase inspection done. Okay, that would be really important because that way, if the person who's doing it knows what to look for, they can certainly advise you hey, we found this is what we found wrong with the car, and give you some idea of how bad different things are. Or maybe the car's in great shape. You know, maybe someone's already spent a bunch of money having different things, you know, brought back up to current day as far as worn out parts and things like that. So, but you certainly want to find out. You don't want to have any surprises. You want to find out things ahead of time so you know it becomes part of the negotiation process in regards to the price of the car. Okay. However, after the purchase, either you look the car over carefully yourself, or again, you have someone do it for you. Okay. And you kind of, part of this process is going to be, what are your goals for the car? Okay. Is this a car that you just want to bring up to where it's, you know, it's safe, it's reliable, you want to take care of the things that you can see? Maybe you're going to make it a daily driver, or maybe you're going to make it a, you know, a weekend type of a fun car. Depending upon what your goals are, kind of then it sort of, you need to lay out a game plan of, okay, what's wrong with this car? And how often am I going to drive it? Is it, it's going to be a daily driver, obviously you want a dependable, reliable car. So you have to be potentially a little bit more aggressive about taking care of these different things that the inspection finds, okay? If the goal is to drive it as a weekend car, then you have more time, okay? Maybe your goal might be that you want to have this thing completely restored, okay, to where it is literally, you know, ground up type of a thing. You know, typically in today's world, that's done really on older cars than what this particular, what I'm talking about in this podcast, okay? But, you know, obviously the cars I am talking about are going to become older over time, and they very well, some of them could very well end up becoming classics anyway, okay? So it kind of, you know, you have to look at what your goals are and what kind of use the car is going to get. But basically after that inspection is done, what should happen, and this might be something if you have the inspection done professionally, hopefully the repair shop will talk to you about what are your goals for the car and what kind of usage is it going to get. And based on that, you want to kind of put together like a game plan, okay? You want to start prioritizing repairs. You want to start potentially, depending upon the age of the car, you want to start making plans and acquiring parts as needed, okay? Some of these cars, again, as they're getting older, some parts are becoming harder to find. Okay, so if this is, you know, a weekend warrior type deal or a weekend driver fun car, you want to initially certainly make it reliable and dependable for you. You don't want to break down on your fun weekend drive, whatever. And so initially it's make it safe, dependable, reliable. And then after that, it's start maybe thinking about some aesthetics things, or maybe having the car repainted or interior work done or whatever the case may be. But anything that's a, you know, a mechanical type repair, you want to make sure that if there's anything else in that area that should maybe be taken care of at the same time, you want to do that, okay? What you want to do, and again, hopefully the shop can help you with this if a shop is, you know, if you are paying a professional to help you do this or to do it for you, is you want to be prioritizing because and getting parts and stuff, because if you go in there to do a repair, you want to do whatever else maybe would be advisable or a good idea to do at the same time, okay, because ultimately it will save you money, okay. So in other words, you want to do multiple repairs in the same area of the vehicle to save time and possible duplication of repairs performed, okay. You want to do as much as you can in that area at one time, okay? It may take you longer to get parts together. It might take more money to do that. But that way you're duplicating time and labor and stuff. So ultimately it ends up costing you less money than if you went in, fixed this, and then 6 months later went, oh, geez, we should have done this too. And then you got to go back in. And so, you know, it's a waste. So, again, either kind of figure that out on your own, or if you have a shop that's helping you, they should be able to help you with that. Depending upon how much of a project this is for you, but basically as the project moves along and you've got taken care of the mechanical type repairs and any electrical and things like that, again, if you're going to be having interior or paint work, you want to start finding out what shops you want to use and, you know, if needed, okay? Start lining those up. And again, this is assuming you kind of want to keep this process moving along, okay? I mean, for some people, they buy a car and it sits for 10 years in their storage unit or whatever, and then they finally get around to it, and some people never get around to it, okay? So, and lastly, parts availability. I will say, even with the cars I work on a day-to-day basis, I mean, I don't see a lot of older cars myself, really. That's just kind of the way it is in today's world where I am, but I certainly do see them from time to time. And I will say, I mean, I've had my shop now for 24 plus years, and I will say that it is becoming harder to get some parts for the older cars. Whereas in the past, it was, you could order it, maybe it might have to be through the dealer, but it was attainable, okay? There are things now where I call up the dealer, as a for instance, and they go, oh, that's in LA. It's no longer available. It's nowhere in the country. Germany doesn't show any, and they're not going to make any more, period. End of story. Okay. So you either have to try to find one maybe used. I mean, certainly there's always eBay and so on and so forth, but I'm not a big fan of that. But, I mean, there are obviously sources out there, but in some respects you don't know what you're getting, so... But you do what you got to do. But parts availability, unfortunately, is becoming more of an issue. BMW, I'm assuming they still have this department, but the BMW had put together and had for a long time what was called BMW Classic. Okay. Its whole reason for existence was to be able to supply, as best as they could, to be able to supply parts for the older cars. Excuse me. And they did a pretty gosh darn good job of that. Well, here we are in 2020, and there's now over 60 models of BMWs. So it's become much, much harder to have the parts available. And so what they're doing now is on, to me, what would be relatively newer cars, like a 2000 or 03 or 04 model year car, there's stuff that you can't get for it anymore that in the past would have been just a phone call. Hey, let's order it. Okay. And now it's, nope, no longer available. Nobody's making it. It's been surprising to me. So, again, it's not that they're maybe not available somewhere in the world, but it is becoming, more of an issue. So, again, it goes back to what your goals are for the car. So that's... one thing you may want to consider doing, and this could be just a lot of fun too, is as far as information and camaraderie in the U.S. anyway, if you're not a member, join the BMW CCA, the BMW Car Club of America, okay? It's about $40 or $50 a year, okay? And if nothing else, they have probably one of the best automotive mark magazines in the country, okay? I mean, we're not talking about it started out as some little newsletter thing, but what you get now is comparable of like Road and Track or something like that. Okay. It's actually a great magazine. To me, it's worth the $40 or $50 a year just for that. Okay. But of course, there's local, it is a nationwide car club, but of course, there are local chapters. And so now you have the opportunity to get involved with your local chapter. I mean, they do different, events and things like that. It allows you the opportunity to network with other enthusiasts that, hey, they love their BMW too. I mean, that's why they're part of the club, okay? So I would encourage you, whether you're restoring a car or not, or maybe you just really like BMWs, okay? Just the magazine alone is worth it, okay? But there's certainly a lot of other opportunities that go along with that. So I would encourage you to become a club member. And there's a lot of different discount programs and things like that that are available. Service shops and parts suppliers, if you tell them you're a BMW CCA member, you could very well end up with some kind of discount on parts purchases or repairs or whatever the case may be. So something to look into. That's about it on this one. I hope I've given you some, thoughts and things to look at and think about when you're out there potentially buying an older car. I would definitely encourage you to listen to those other podcasts that I mentioned, because that I kind of elaborate, more on those kinds of things in those podcasts as far as pre-purchase inspections and what I would consider to be reliable, dependable BMW models and years, so to speak. So I appreciate your time listening. I hope you got something out of it. As usual, if you want to get a hold of me via email, it's bkpodcasts5@gmail.com. I'm also on LinkedIn. And again, you know, I have a shop in Southern California that's called Brad's Motorworks. So if you want to check out, I've got a couple different web pages. I certainly appreciate you check that out and see what's going on. And if you happen to be in the area in Southern California, you know, give me a call or stop by and we can chit-chat and go from there. I'm normally there 8 to 5:30 Monday through Friday, and, you know, we'll see what happens. So appreciate your time. I hope you got something out of this. And, you know, happy, have a good time looking for a car if that's what you're doing. And they are out there. Don't necessarily be willing to, you know, pull the trigger on any one particular one unless it really meets the criteria that hopefully you've thought about of what it is you're looking for and what your goals are. So, again, appreciate you listening. I hope you have a fantastic day and a great tomorrow. Thank you again. Thank you for listening to this episode. It's been an honor and a privilege to spend time with you. I hope you found this of value. Please share it with family and friends. Above all else, with all you're getting, get understanding. May God bless you and keep you. And thank you again.